Journey to the Center of the Earth by Jules Verne. Chapter 35, An Electric Storm. Friday, August 21st. On the morrow, the magnificent geyser has disappeared. The wind has risen and has rapidly carried us away from Axel Island. The roarings become lost in the distance. The weather, if we may use that term, will change before long. The atmosphere is charged with vapors, pervaded with the electricity generated by the evaporation of saline waters. The clouds are sinking lower and assume an olive hue. The electric light can scarcely penetrate through the dense curtain which has dropped over the theater on which the battle of the elements is about to be waged. I feel peculiar sensations, like many creatures on Earth, at the approach of violent atmospheric changes. The heavily voluted cumulus clouds lower gloomily and threateningly. They wear that implacable look which I have sometimes noticed at the outbreak of a great storm. The air is heavy. The sea is calm. In the distance, the clouds resemble great bales of cotton piled up in picturesque disorder. By degrees they dilate and gain in huge size what they lose in number. Such is their ponderous weight that they cannot rise from the horizon, but, obeying an impulse from higher currents, their dense consistency slowly yields. The gloom upon them deepens, and they soon present to our view a ponderous mass of almost level surface. From time to time, a fleecy tuft of mist, with yet some gleaming light left upon it, drops down upon the dense floor of gray and loses itself in the opaque and impenetrable mass. The atmosphere is evidently charged and surcharged with electricity. My whole body is saturated. My hair bristles, just as when you stand upon an insulated stool under the action of an electrical machine. It seems to me as if my companions, the moment they touched me, would receive a severe shock like that from an electric eel. At 10 in the morning, the symptoms of storm become aggravated. The wind never lulls, but to acquire increased strength. The vast bank of heavy clouds is a huge reservoir of fearful windy gusts and rushing storms. I am loath to believe these atmospheric menaces, and yet I cannot help muttering, "Here's some very bad weather coming on." The professor made no answer. His temper is awful, to judge from his working of his features, as he sees this vast length of ocean unrolling before him to an indefinite extent. He can only spare time to shrug his shoulders viciously. "There's a heavy storm coming on," I cried, pointing towards the horizon. "Those clouds seem as if they were going to crush the sea." A deep silence falls on all around. The lately roaring winds are hushed into a dead calm. Nature seems to breathe no more, and to be sinking into the stillness of death. On the mast already I see the light play of a lambent St. Elmo's fire. The outstretched sail catches not a breath of wind and hangs like a sheet of lead. The rudder stands motionless in a sluggish, waveless sea. But if we have now ceased to advance, why do we yet leave that sail loose, which, at the first shock of the tempest, may capsize us in a moment? "Let us reef the sail and cut the mast down," I cried. "That will be safest." "No, no, never," shouted my impetuous uncle. "Never! Let the wind catch us if it will. What I want is to get the least glimpse of rock or shore, even if our raft would be smashed into shivers." The words were hardly out of his mouth when a sudden change took place in the southern sky. The piled-up vapors condensed into water, and the air, put into violent action to supply the vacuum left by the condensation of the mists, rouses itself into a whirlwind. It rushes on from the farthest recesses of the vast cavern. The darkness deepens. Scarcely can I jot down a few hurried notes. The helm makes a bound. My uncle falls full length. I creep close to him. He has laid a firm hold upon a rope and appears to watch with grim satisfaction this awful display of elemental strife. Hans stirs not. His long hair, blown by the pelting storm and laid flat across his immovable countenance, makes him a strange feature, for the end of each lock of loose flowing hair is tipped with little luminous radiations. This frightful mask of electric sparks suggests to me, even in this dizzy excitement, a comparison with pre-Adamite man, the contemporary of the Ichthyosaurus and the Megatherium. The mast yet holds firm. The sail stretches tight like a bubble ready to burst. The raft flies at a rate that I cannot reckon, but not so fast as the foaming clouds of spray which it dashes from side to side in its headlong speed. "The sail! The sail!" I cry, motioning to lower it. "No! replies my uncle. Nedge, repeats Hans, leisurely shaking his head. But now the rain forms a rushing cataract in front of that horizon towards which we are running with such maddening speed. But before it has reached us, the rain clouds part asunder, the sea boils, and the electric fires are brought into violent action by a mighty chemical power that descends from the higher regions. The most vivid flashes of lightning are mingled with the violent crash of continuous thunder. Ceaseless fiery arrows dart in and out amongst the flying thunderclouds. The vaporous mass soon glows with incandescent heat. Hailstones rattle fiercely down, and as they dash upon our iron tools, they too emit gleams and flashes of lurid light. The heaving waves resemble fiery volcanic hills, each belching forth its own interior flames, and every crest is plumed with dancing fire. My eyes fail under the dazzling light. My ears are stunned with the incessant crash of thunder. I must be bound to the mast, which bows like a reed before the mighty strength of the storm. Here my notes become vague and indistinct. I've only been able to find a few which I seem to have jotted down almost unconsciously. But their very brevity and their obscurity reveal the intensity of the excitement which dominated me, and describe the actual position even better than my memory could do. Sunday, 23rd. Where are we? Driven forward with a swiftness that cannot be measured. The night was fearful. No abatement of the storm. The din and uproar are incessant. Our ears are bleeding. To exchange a word is impossible. The lightning flashes with intense brilliancy and never seems to cease for a moment. Zigzag streams of bluish-white fire dash down upon the sea and rebound, and then take an upward flight till they strike the granite vault that overarches our heads. Suppose that solid roof should crumble down upon our heads. Other flashes with incessant play cross their vivid fires, while others again roll themselves into balls of living fire which explode like bombshells, but the music of which scarcely adds to the din of the battle strife that almost deprives us of our senses of hearing and sight. The limit of intense loudness has been passed, within which the human ear can distinguish one sound from another. If all the powder magazines in the world were to explode at once, we should hear no more than we do now. From the undersurface of the clouds there are continual emissions of lurid light. Electric matter is in continual evolution from their component molecules. The gaseous elements of the air need to be slaked with moisture, for innumerable columns of water rush upwards into the air and fall back again in white foam. Whither are we flying? My uncle lies full length across the raft. The heat increases. I refer to the thermometer. It indicates that the figure is obliterated. Monday, August 24. Will there be an end to it? Is the atmospheric condition, having once reached this density, to become final? We are prostrated and worn out with fatigue. But Hans is as usual. The raft bears on still to the southeast. We have made 200 leagues since we left Axel Island. At noon, the violence of the storm redoubles. We are obliged to secure as fast as possible every article that belongs to our cargo. Each of us is lashed to some part of the raft. The waves rise above our heads. For 3 days we have never been able to make each other hear a word. Our mouths open, our lips move, but not a word can be heard. We cannot even make ourselves heard by approaching our mouth close to the ear. My uncle has drawn nearer to me. He has uttered a few words. They seem to be, "We are lost," but I am not sure. At last I write down the words, "Let us lower the sail." He nods his consent. Scarcely has he lifted his head again before a ball of fire has bounded over the waves and lighted on board our raft. Mast and sail flew up in an instant together, and I saw them carried up to prodigious height, resembling in appearance a pterodactyl, one of those strong birds of the infant world. We lay there, our blood running cold with unspeakable terror. The fireball, half of it white, half azure blue, and the size of a 10-inch shell, moved slowly about the raft, but revolving on its own axis with astonishing velocity, as if whipped round by the force of the whirlwind. Here it comes, there it glides. Now it is up the ragged stump of the mast, thence it lightly leaps on the provision bag, descends with a light bound, and just skims the powder magazine. Horrible! We shall be blown up! But no. The dazzling disk of mysterious light nimbly leaps aside. It approaches Hans, who fixes his blue eye upon it steadily. It threatens the head of my uncle, who falls upon his knees with his head down to avoid it. And now my turn comes, pale and trembling under the blinding splendor and the melting heat. It drops at my feet, spinning silently round upon the deck. I try to move my foot away, but cannot. A suffocating smell of nitrogen fills the air. It enters the throat. It fills the lungs. We suffer stifling pains. Why am I unable to move my foot? Is it riveted to the planks? Alas, the fall upon our fated raft of this electric globe has magnetized every iron article on board. The instruments, the tools, our guns are clashing and clanking violently in their collisions with each other. The nails of my boots cling tenaciously to a plate of iron let into the timbers, and I cannot draw my foot away from the spot. At last, by a violent effort, I release myself at the instant when the ball in its gyrations was about to seize upon it and carrying me off my feet. Oh, what a flood of intense and dazzling light! The globe has burst, and we are deluged with tongues of fire. Then, all the light disappears. I could just see my uncle at full length on the raft, and Hans still at his helm, and spitting fire under the action of the electricity which has saturated him. But where are we going to? Where? Tuesday, August 25th. I recover from a long swoon. The storm continues to roar and rage. The lightnings dash hither and thither like broods of fiery serpents filling all the air. Are we still under the sea? Yes. We are borne at incalculable speed. We have been carried under England, under the Channel, under France, perhaps under the whole of Europe. A fresh noise is heard. Surely, it is the sea breaking upon the rocks, but then... The end of chapter 35 of Journey to the Center of the Earth by Jules Verne. Read by Rick Kishner for Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.